Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 223 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as usual. Today, my guest is three-time returning champion, Michael Mogul. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because he's been on the podcast twice before, way back on episode 88 in November of 2017 and episode 121 in July of 2018. And Mike is the CEO and founder of a company called Crisp Video. And in full disclosure, I am a Crisp Video client. They made the brand video for my law firm, and as they have done for thousands of other attorneys. And Michael has grown his business from just being a video production company to now full legal coaching and services enhancing provider. And he's known both for, you know, the video company that he runs, the book that he wrote called The Game-Changing Attorney, and the conference that he runs, which is the Game Changers Summit, coming up here in November. So I wanted to have Mike back on the show, one, because I think he's a great guy and a phenomenal speaker. I learn so much every time I speak to him. And two, to give everyone an idea, a heads up about what to anticipate going forward here, particularly with the Game Changers 3 Summit, which I hope to attend in November. So without any further delay, let's listen again for the third time to my friend, Michael Mogul. Mike Mogul, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you back as a three-time returning champion. For our listeners out there who don't remember Michael, Michael was on episode 88 way back in November of 2017. And then later on episode 121 on July of 2018, exactly 2 years to the day from when this episode will air. So welcome back after a two-year hiatus, Michael. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, it was interesting that to hear that the first time I was on was in 2017, because I think that was such a pivotal year. That was, you know, for those of you that know us for giving away like these Teslas and the cars, that was the first year we did it. I think it was in April of 2017 at the AVO conference, and then the following year we decided to I think it was in 2018. We decided to host our conference, wrote the book. But just some context around myself. So I run a company called Crisp Video, and we work with law firms all across the nation. Started as a video company, then turned into a video marketing company. And now I think the best way to look at it is more of as a law firm growth company, because we now offer coaching, everything from like leadership coaching to hiring, team training, you know, team culture, marketing strategy, all those different things, which were really just extensions of each of the kind of the prior evolutions of the company. So the way we looked at it from the standpoint was, you know, where are our clients' pain points? Where did they need additional support? And, you know, it expanded from there. But it's interesting, you know, going back to episode 88 in 2017, at that point, like that was, so it, in April, we probably placed the single biggest bet that I'd ever placed on the business, which was giving away a Tesla Model S to a client, which at the time was like wiping out my entire savings and, you know, making just doing this at the law, you know, the AVA Lawyernomics conference. And seeing that work well, I think helped build confidence around placing additional bets, you know, as we grew and grew and grew, and, you know, then placing them on a bigger scale, which eventually led to us hosting our own conference, the Game Changer Summit in 2018.
Yeah, and I will tell you that you know, in a crowded space, it's always difficult to get the public's attention or the target market's attention. You know, people do different things to do that. Giving away a Tesla, I'm telling you what, that's like drop the mic kind of bold, innovative, you know, bet on yourself move. I remember because I was at the Avvo conference. That's the first time I was aware of your company. And I said, this dude is giving away a Tesla? I couldn't figure out how you could make that work, but you certainly did. And then the next year when you started the Game Changers Summit in 2018, you gave away three of them.
I know. I look back at this and it was insane. So even with the first Tesla, I mean, you have to understand, like, the decision around that was the fact that we wanted to do something where it was a client referral program. So the way to kind of reward our clients for their support. And when we looked around, we saw what other people were doing, which was like, you know, they were giving away, you know, an Apple gift card or an Amazon gift card, you know, or something of, you know, to that extent. I remember somebody said, well, what if we gave a car away? And then once I got that in my head, there was no going back. So I said, okay, let's give away a Tesla. It was like the 77,000 Tesla Model S. And it was, I thought this would be a home run because I thought right off the bat, you have to remember, this is in 2017. As soon as we announced this thing, we're going to get so much interest, referrals going to roll in, it's going to be amazing. And I remember in the first month that we announced it, we didn't get a single
crickets.
Referral.
And I remember nothing. You saying. Yeah. And at that nothing. Point, so, at that point, dude, I think I'd have been in the hospital with heart palpitations.
Well, I definitely had, you know, my eye twitched for probably, you know, 8 months or so or 9 months leading up to, you know, the Lawyernomics conference where we would actually give this thing away. And, you know, and people are like, well, how did you make it work? And, you know, I think it was first off being in a position where right off the bat, it didn't have, you know, it didn't get the response that we were hoping. And as a result, we really had to figure out why. And those types of situations, you know, looking back now, I think that they're so pivotal and they're so important to not give up in those moments and to continue to kind of troubleshoot, because we realized right off the bat, you know, when we didn't get any names or any referrals in that first month, we started looking at it and saying, well, okay, well, why is that? And we actually found that one of the biggest barriers right off the bat was the fact that people didn't believe we were actually giving a car away.
Yeah, so they thought there was some type of gimmick associated with it.
Yeah. So we had to overcome that barrier, right? So we had to first, you know, make it clear that we were actually doing this, that it wasn't a lease, that it wasn't anything like that. We were literally giving a car away to a client. Now I think people become much more used to it. And then when you said, okay, we gave away three Teslas at the Game Changer Summit in 2018, and then we actually gave away four cars last year at the second one. It's like you have to keep topping yourself, or at least this is what I tell myself. It's just that if we gave away one Tesla now, it's amazing. I actually think people would be disappointed.
That's it. True. But I think we don't want to lose sight of the fact that it's just not, quote, you know, the gimmick of giving away a car that makes things work. And I think there's an important lesson that you kind of alluded to there. And I know when we get around to talking about your book, we're going to kind of flesh this out a little further. But one of the strengths of what you've done in building Crisp Video into the behemoth that it is today is a complete willingness to learn from your mistakes and to recognize that that's the greatest learning opportunity that there is. And I find that to be the, you know, case with this podcast. You know, when I do some feedback with listeners on, you know, what you like to hear, they tell me, like, I want to hear the problems that other attorneys had and how they overcame them. I don't really want to know how the people had success right out the door, and, you know, things fell into their laps and they just, hey, look, I've got a $1 million firm. And all I did is, you know, wake up one morning and open my practice. They want to hear the struggles that people have. And in the same token, I think in what you do, people want to know where you learned from those hard, you know, situations and what you learned.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. I don't know that it's ever an interesting story if you just talk about, well, that month was a success and the following month is a success. I mean, fortunately for me, I have tons of failures to talk about, because that's been the road over the last 8 years. I mean, it's nonstop. But I truly do believe that if you're not, you know, failing to some degree, right? I think true failure is only when you actually give up or quit. But you know, then you're probably not stretching enough. You're probably not doing enough. You're not pushing yourself enough. I mean, if you only set the type of goal that you know 100% that you can hit, then to me, that's just a task, right? That's like a task and a to-do list. Like if you know how to get there, right? Right. It's like the goals that you don't know how to get there, like meaning that, okay, you know, you look at like Elon Musk and they're, you know, launching these rockets up, you know, and you have to consider, okay, what kind of team do we have to build? What kind of capabilities do we have to learn? Like all these different things that have to come together before we can do that, which makes it such a challenging, but I think ultimately worthy goal to aspire to.
And I think one of the things that we as attorneys fall victim to is we'll try something a little bit out of our comfort zone. But because it's out of our comfort zone, we're not really giving it 100%. I'm going to try it. I'm only going to put like 80% effort into this because it's not something I normally do. And then when it doesn't pan out the way we would hope, we're not inclined to say, okay, well, what didn't I do? What if I had done that extra 20%, how would that have manifested itself? And what kind of results might I had I really fully committed to reaching this difficult goal? And we as attorneys so frequently say, it doesn't work. I'll move on to something else. So you have a lot of, you know, 80% half-assed attempts at making something work. And we don't learn our lesson from any of those. And I think it's a common thread that I hear all the time.
There's so many things in what you just said as I'm listening to this. It's from the standpoint that to me, like achieving goals is always a function of commitment to those goals. So like meaning that if you yourself are not sold on like whatever the future that goal achieving that provides for you, then it's going to become acceptable to not hit the goal, right? So like meaning that, okay, we didn't grow by 5% or 10% or, you know, whatever it was that was the goal. It was one of those things that it wasn't meaningful enough to the person who set the goal that it made commitment kind of like a, you know, optional thing. Maybe some days you were more committed than others and so on. But I think if the goal is truly, truly, truly worthwhile to you, then you'll do whatever it takes. And that becomes where, you know, you have that intrinsic motivation coming from. And then the other thing that was interesting, I hear the same thing. You know, I hear this all the time. I see people keep their goals a secret. Like they don't want to share them because they fear that if they share those goals and then they fail, then they're going to like fail in front of other people. And I've actually found the opposite to be true in my case, meaning that, you know, to create accountability, I share goals publicly. And it's not to, you know, to come across as, and I see it sometimes, I think someone could perceive it as either egotistical or boastful or what have you. But what they don't realize is I'm making those goals public to help me have the accountability to actually achieve them. So like if I tell 1,000 people, here's what we're going to do, can you imagine falling flat in front of 1,000 people and not achieving that? And I think that becomes the, I guess, what drives me, because now, you know, a lot of people know about these things.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more, because I mean, let's face it, when I say I see this a lot from other attorneys that I speak to, I also see it a lot in myself. And you know, my past is littered with, you know, half-assed attempts to achieve certain objectives, and it's all because I didn't commit and fully, or I only took the first step and never took the second step. And so I'm as guilty, if not more guilty, than anybody else. So don't think I'm, you know, putting myself up on a pedestal there. Witness my whole video marketing, you know, campaign. Before I actually turned the camera on, it was about 18 months after I set that objective, because I was waiting to look better in front of the camera, in all honesty. And I said, you know what, dude, I'm going to be waiting a long time. I better get on with it. And when I found people really don't care. They just want to hear what you have to say and understand how you can bring value to them and how you can address their issues. And if they see a little vulnerability in you, it makes you more relatable.
Absolutely. I think that type of vulnerability is only a positive. I mean, you have that, and you have that authenticity. I mean, if you remember, even at the last summit last year in September, back when, you know, when events were still happening, but I remember that my keynote at the end of the day on the second day, I was so nervous about this because literally the entire thing is a story of how I failed. Like literally the whole thing. I think sometimes people go on stage and they want to talk about these successes, and I'm literally talking about, here's everything I did wrong. Here's how it affected me. And like, just, it's like the cautionary tale. And I was so nervous about that because I felt that sharing a story like that could hurt me. Right. So like, it could hurt me. It could hurt the business. So like, you know, I think people are used to, you know, your kind of depiction of success. And I went the opposite way with it. And I'm really glad I did, because I think that helped to really humanize the company, especially as we were growing, to show that, you know, okay, we still make mistakes. I make mistakes as a leader. You know, the most important thing is that we're learning.
Yeah. And I, as I said, I think that's how people come to relate to businesses, to attorneys, to entrepreneurs, if they can see themselves a little bit in all of that. And if it's totally disconnected, it's very hard to create that feeling of know, like, and trust, because, you know, people say, well, I don't really know them. I don't know them well enough to know whether I like them, and I don't know enough about them to know whether I trust them.
Yeah, absolutely. If I ever come across anybody who's telling me that, you know, the people that always have the answers like to every question, they've already figured it out. They're like, yeah, Neil, I already know that. You should read this book. I've already read that book. Like they already know the answer, and they feel like there's nothing that they stand and learn. And I think those people are very, not only are they not very interesting, but I find that they rarely make much progress.
So just to circle back a little bit, I wanted to make sure that it was clear to our listeners that I am a Crisp Video client. And I was a client actually before, I think before we had you on episode 88, or if not, it was shortly thereafter, because I remember when we filmed my brand video, it was cold. And so I think it was just about that time. So if you go to my law firm's website, which I don't promote on this podcast too often, tyrolawfirm.com, if you go there, right on the front page, you see the video that Crisp did for me. And there isn't a day or a week that goes by that somebody doesn't say to me, dude, that video is unbelievable. And I've come to have that sharp eye now. I can go around the internet and I can see, you know, a video that I'm 99.9% sure is a client of yours. And talk to us a little bit about how you grew the video business. I know there's some principal tenets you have about creating video brand videos for law firms, and you kind of focus exclusively on law firms. And tell us kind of what your approach is in that regard.
Yeah, and it was interesting. So we started the business in 2012. You know, one of the things that we realized early on, and we used to work in all different industries, and like on the big brand space with like Coca-Cola and Verizon and those businesses, and then all sorts of industries. And early on, we had a law firm come to us, and she had no online presence whatsoever. And we helped create a series of great videos for her, and then her business just exploded. And we did that for another firm, and then another firm. And the main thing that I saw, especially even in those early years, where people were telling me that there was no future in online video, that you couldn't compete against the agencies, that it was all TV, was just the fact that much of legal marketing and advertising was very much direct response focused, and it was also it didn't focus much on humanizing the attorneys, the law firm, and there was really not much story behind any of this content. So meaning that you could have somebody jumping on top of the semi truck or saying that, they'll provide the best representation. But because there was so much supply, meaning there's a lot of law firms, right? And then there's, not as much demand at times, it seems, that there wasn't much clear differentiation. And for consumers, it was very difficult for them to tell one law firm apart from another. So they go to, multiple law firm websites, and they'd see, okay, these guys are super lawyers, and so are these guys, and so on. Everybody was the best. Everybody was, would fight the hardest, and so on. But, to a consumer who, year over year, they started to, I guess the trust that they would have within the legal profession was I think hindered, probably due to a lot of legal advertising, to be, quite honest, in terms of like how, how the general public was being manipulated and even marketed to. So what I saw an opportunity was for the fact that like there are really great attorneys out there and just great firm owners that simply don't know how to stand out and how to differentiate themselves, and that we could help those firms. So, we have this saying, the best cases go to the best marketers, which is an unfortunate truth. So meaning that, if you look in any given market, for the most part, you see the major Goliath advertisers 1, 2, and 3, and they're getting the bulk of the cases. And because they get the bulk of the cases, they get the bulk of the revenue, and then they pour that back into advertising. It's not a level playing field. But when you look at some of the highest value cases and some of the more discerning clients, that's where you see a lot of the smaller firms have opportunities to pick up those cases. So that's where we, you know, we focused on our marketing, and it was very much focused around, like, it's almost like, if you've seen the videos, the best way I can describe them is like, they're almost like movie trailers. So, you know, we take stories that are already there. So we don't like manufacture any stories. So we're already, you know, we're telling the stories that, you know, why someone decided to become an attorney, why they do what they do, what sets them apart. But we're doing it in a very engaging way to the viewer so that it helps to engage them. So from that standpoint, it was really just story-driven content. I looked at it and I was like, well, wouldn't somebody want to know, like the same way if you've ever watched like documentaries, or if you watch like those HBO 24/7 boxing, like, you know, if fighters that you would not even care about, but you could watch them training, you can watch them with their families, you can watch them, you know, to learn about why they do what they do. And before you know it, you're rooting for them. And I figured, well, why don't we do the same thing for law firms?
Yeah, I will tell you, I forget his name. I should have looked it up before we got on the call, and I won't expect you to remember it, but he's an attorney down in New Orleans, and a personal injury attorney, and he was one of your clients. And I remember he showed his video at a conference I went to, and it talked about his ex-military and got out of the military. And unfortunately, his mother was killed in a car accident. And that motivated him to go into personal injury. And I've told people ever since that, you know, I defy you, if you were looking for a personal injury attorney in the New Orleans area, and you came across his website and watched that video, I defy you to go to anybody else's website. Mm-hmm. You know, because it was such a compelling story. It was so heartfelt and difficult to swallow to some extent, if you put yourself in this guy's shoes. And I see that in videos you've created for attorneys all the time. And, you know, mine is no different. You know, my decision to go into estate planning was largely based on the fact that my mom passed away without a will. And we talk about that in my brand video. And you guys did a phenomenal job of making that part of the story, but not the only part of the story. You know, and so I just think if anybody's looking to create a brand video, you start again. I have no financial interest here, but you start with Chris video, and that's it. That's the list. You don't have to go any further.
Well, thank you. And look, and I will say, whether someone decides to hire us or not, I do believe that if nothing else, find a way to convey what makes you and your firm different in a way to be able to get that story out there, whether it's through video or whether it's through text or whatever it is, but just to give the people who are basically deciding whether they should hire you or your competition just a reason to care about you.
And I think it's a point that's lost on a lot of folks, because oftentimes when you hear them say, well, find out what makes your firm different from the others. Well, if you're talking to somebody who's doing a family law as their principal practice area, they oftentimes struggle to figure out, well, what the hell is different about my firm? I mean, I'm doing family law just like everybody else. Okay. But if you relate it to a story that about their own experience, you know, whether it be the divorce that they went through or the custody issue that they went through or how they helped somebody through an adoption or guardianship or something that people then can really understand and relate to, that alone is enough to set you apart and make you different. You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. So let's then talk about you eventually, after your first conference, wrote a book. And I was lucky enough to get an original copy of The Game-Changing Attorney. Thankfully, it's signed by the author, Michael Mogul. So, Michael, tell us a little bit about the book. I know it's still in print. It's still going strong. How did you come about to write the book? And the geek in me wants to ask you, what was your process for writing?
Yeah.
Pen on yellow legal pad, or did you dictate it, or kind of that kind of issue? And what do you think of the book today?
Yeah, well, I will say that, I had help from the standpoint that I worked with a company that their name is Scribe Media. So they worked with like David Goggins on his book. And what this allowed me to do, because I was unfamiliar with the process altogether. And I see that as a barrier, I think, to a lot of people that want to write a book. So meaning that if I were to sit down and write, 300 pages or something like that, then I'd still be writing the book today. But fortunately, I was able to dictate it. We took basically transcriptions of all the dictations, and then we would reformat those, and then those became the chapters of the book. So, over a span of about, I think it was like 7 or 8 months, that's exactly what I did. So it wasn't that somebody wrote the book for me. I mean, I was doing these 3-hour calls every single week on every single topic. And my first concern was that, one, I didn't have enough content. But we learned very quickly that was not the case. And then I think the thing that really helped to get it out was I had a deadline. So that's another thing. I find that if you don't set a deadline, these things stretch on for years. And the deadline that I set was our first conference. And I said, we're going to do the book launch there. But essentially the book was, the name of the book's The Game-Changing Attorney. And it was taking everything that we had learned over the, since our inception, working with hundreds of firms, of being able to, articulate what were the most successful firms doing, how were they marketing, where are opportunities for solos and small firms to succeed. If you were starting from the beginning, how would you do it? How could you take on these Goliath firms? And, distilling it all down into a book. And on top of that, also featuring case studies from firms that are, living and breathing and real. And because I wrote this book for the skeptic, because as I'm writing this thing, I'm thinking someone's going to, call BS on that, or they're going to call BS on something else. So, we literally include the name of every single firm owner of every single law firm. You could reach out to these people. You can, you can call them, you can speak with them. They're all still practicing law. So I figured that was very important. But it was basically like the do-it-yourself book. Like, if you want to do this yourself, you don't have to hire Chris, but like, this is how to approach it. And we didn't focus solely on video. It was largely based on, okay, how do you, like we were just speaking about earlier, how do you figure out your why? How do you determine what type of story to tell? What is the proper way, like what are some ways in which you could market your firm, whether it's, SEO or Google PPC, or social media or whatever it might be. And I wrote this book, I guess with the idea that these platforms would change. So like meaning that the platforms of today may be different from the platforms like Facebook and Instagram and YouTube of tomorrow, but the principles would remain the same. So that was my goal when writing the book.
One of the chapters in the book is called the new client journey, or the new buyer's journey, something along those lines. And it had to do with the process by which potential legal clients go through the process of, selecting an attorney and engaging them. That's a popular topic right now. There's a lot of people who have written on that specifically, but you were actually, you know, a couple of years ago, kind of right on the edge of kind of rethinking the whole marketing strategy from the client journey perspective. And I, in preparation for this video, in this interview, I went back and reread that chapter specifically because I remember it resonated with me when I read the book the first time. And it still it holds up very well today. And it's almost prescient in its understanding of what potential legal clients go through when selecting an attorney.
Yeah, you know, and one of the main things that I wanted to hit with that was just the standpoint that with many law firm owners, the mindset is that I need to capture the person who's searching for a lawyer today. So like meaning that if they're searching for, you know, estate planning San Diego or personal injury Houston or whatever it is, that I need to get that person. And what we've seen consistently is that only represents about 3% of any, you know, of any market, but yet 90%+ of firms, that's their marketing strategy. They're going after today, when in reality, you stand to gain a whole lot more by marketing to the people that may not be, you know, looking for a lawyer or a law firm today, but may at some point, whether it's for them or for their family members or for their friends, but remaining top of mind. And that's where we looked at that with the new buyer's journey, to where, you know, I think the old buyer's journey is traditionally like awareness, consideration, and decision. Like they hear about you, they think about you, then they decide to hire you. And it's basically like this three-step process that I think for years held up. And, you know, I felt that there's actually a bit more here from the standpoint of, if I'm getting this right, it was awareness, interest, then they're evaluating you, they're making a decision, then five being loyalty, to where this becomes more cyclical and not just, you know, one, two, three step and done. And I'm telling you, the firms that remain top of mind, the ones that are putting out not just great content, but are becoming integral parts of their communities, they're the ones that really hold up and stand the test of time versus the ones that just run, you know, Google pay-per-click ads to the firm who's searching for the keywords today. Not to mention, that's the most expensive way to do it.
Yeah, for sure. So let's transition here then from the book. Let's talk about the summit this year, Game Changers 3. I know that it's currently scheduled to occur in November, 13th, 14th, there in Atlanta. I know I went to the first one. I was unable to make Game Changers 2 last year. It's a spectacular event. I mean, you guys did a great job. And I've told everybody ever since that it's one of the best conferences that I ever went to. Tell me what you have in mind this year, because it's kind of hard to keep topping yourself. I know last year you had Gary Vaynerchuk and Gloria Allred and a couple of other big names as speakers, including this guy, Mike Mogul, who does the keynotes and stuff. What do you got in mind this year?
Yeah, well, I will say, for anyone who hasn't attended the conference, this is a, if you can think of, you know, so we call it a law firm growth conference, but we bring in speakers from like in, you know, within the legal industry, but also outside of it. So I know you mentioned Gary Vaynerchuk. We had Gary last year. This year's lineup includes Malcolm Gladwell and John Maxwell and Cy Wakeman and a few others we haven't announced yet. But the idea was that I believe that people, the experience matters, and that you learn more and you're going to remember more when you're engaged. So meaning that rather than, you know, we looked at the traditional law firm conference, which we were attending, you know, 12 to 15 a year of them. And I remember coming in and seeing people in the back of the room on their laptops and handling emails, and people would step in and out of the room. And it was just literally, it wasn't very exciting. I don't know that, I think people attended because from a networking standpoint, but there was no particular reason to be in the room. And, you know, we took almost the format of like a Dreamforce or like a Tony Robbins Unleash the Power Within. You mold that with, you know, with a high impact law firm conference. So and, you know, we kind of crossed our fingers and hoped that somebody would, you know, would find that interesting. And, you know, the first one was a hit, the second one sold out as well. And then as we go into this third one, it would be the largest. And I will say that I was very nervous, obviously, for the first one because we'd never done it before. And I didn't know if anyone would show up. And then for the second one, I felt that maybe we just got lucky on the first one. So who knows if that one would go as well. But that one, fortunately, that, you know, did go well. I'm most excited for this third one because, you know, we've learned a lot of things. We've gotten a lot of really great feedback, and we have the opportunity to make it the best one yet. But obviously, you know, I guess by the time this podcast launches and so on, I mean, we are in COVID times. So for an event like ours, you know, we have to prioritize, you know, safety and then experience. And, you know, we're the type of company, I mean, when we look at whether it's events or anything we do, that we don't like to make a whole lot of compromises. So, you know, if there's something that would compromise the experience that people would have and it just wouldn't live up to what the event should be, then, you know, then we would wait. We'd wait to do it at a time that would work best. So you and I were talking about this even before we started recording, and one thing that we will not do, And this is, and I guess this seems contrarian to a lot of events that have gone virtual this year, is do this event virtually. Because I think, you know, experience is so, so important, and doing it right is also very important. So that's kind of where we're at. I mean, I'd say that you know, we were fortunate to have it at the end of the year. So it's in November. So that's given us the most time to kind of survey the landscape, see what's going on, you know, both, you know, around the country and so on. But we've got to keep it safe. And I don't want to compromise on the experience.
Well, I will tell you, described it as something akin to going to a live Apple event. Of course, you know, I'm an Apple geek, so that would be where, you know, my frame of reference is. But, you know, if you watch any of the live Apple events, they're just audio visual extravaganzas, and the energy level in the Steve Jobs theater is off the charts. Again, for Apple geeks, I get it. But still, that's the environment, and that's the vibe that comes from those events. And I think of Game Changers kind of the same way in comparison to other, you know, other conferences. And it's not to disparage other conferences. You know, they have their place, they have their value, and you know, some are very successful. I've been to lots of them and enjoy going, but yours is completely different. I mean, one of the things, you don't have vendors, right? There's no vendors.
Got a lot of criticism for that. But by the way, you know, I get criticism for everything we do these days, and that was certainly one of them. Because early on, we decided we're not going to do vendors and sponsors. And you look at conferences across the board, you know, both in the legal industry and even outside of it, that's basically unheard of. But we wanted to prioritize, again, experience. And we figured by having this event be, you know, not be NASCAR essentially, where, right, you know, with Wi-Fi sponsored by this company, and then the water sponsored by this company, and the napkins are, you know, another firm. And nothing against events that choose to do that. I think that's, you know, that's their prerogative. I've learned that, you know, it's your event, it's your rules, but we wanted to focus so much on the experience. And I feel that when you walk through like a lengthy exhibit hall, that can be a distraction, and it does not provide the best experience for attendees.
Well, and also it draws away from the stage. I mean, look, I've enjoyed walking the vendor floor. In some cases, I spend more time on the vendor floor than I do in the conference, but that's because I'm looking at it from a perspective of a podcast host as well as an attorney. And so I'm looking for stories. I'm looking for opportunities. I'm looking for guests. So I spend a lot more time in the vendor's area than maybe others do. But, you know, if the vendor floor is open while the presentations are being made, there's a lot of people not attending the presentations. And also, when you have multiple tracks, you kind of split your audience up and you divide up the energy. And while it has its advantages and people can choose what track they want to pay attention to or what speaker they want to pay attention to, there's no question that the energy is different. And that's what I really liked about Game Changers. One room, one speaker at a time, you know, an audiovisual extravaganza, as you would expect from a video or a company that has its roots in video and video marketing. Unbelievable presentation. And some phenomenal speakers. I mean, look, I'd pay the entrance fee just to see Malcolm Gladwell, that one guy.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to hear that, because that's another area we're always trying to top. And I'll tell you, I mean, this one has the best lineup. What you just described, we say internally is like omakase, right? It's like the Japanese phrase. If you ever go to like a sushi restaurant, yeah, and it's essentially means like, I'll leave it up to you, or chef's choice, or something like that. And that's where, how we look at the event. We want to take people on like a, and this is going to sound probably cheesy to somebody who's listening, that I don't know, we've gotten almost obsessed with these things, but to take somebody on a narrative and almost like an emotional journey, if you will, from the start of the day to the end of the day. Like, so there's obviously breakfast and lunch in between, but just when you give people so many options of saying, well, we're going to have 5 breakouts during this time, and then we're going to have 5 breakouts somewhere else. Not only do you disperse everyone, but at that point, you don't have kind of the highs and the lows and all these different things that you gain through a narrative. And that's why we keep it all in one room. That's why, like, you know, where we, the order in which we put certain speakers, certain topics, you know, even certain content pieces and videos, it's all designed around the experience that we want to provide people with throughout the entire event.
Yeah. And so it's a really great event. Again, I have no financial interest in this. I just love the event, love what you do. And I would encourage all of our listeners, if you can find a way to make it to Atlanta, if in fact it comes off in November, then it's time well spent, because I guarantee you won't be disappointed. Let me just ask you one other question about it, just to be on point and to address a criticism that, frankly, I have had. Okay, I felt at some level that the conference was better suited for small firms wanting to become bigger firms, as opposed to solos wanting to grow. Is that a mistaken viewpoint?
No, that's probably fair. That's fair. You know, I think that's a good point. I would definitely say so. I mean, anyone is welcome to attend, obviously, but I mean, when you look at the sweet spot, for the majority of people, I mean, it is primarily firm owners, right? So it's generally not as, in terms of the content and the things that we discuss, which a lot of the topics, you know, gearing around leadership and so on, it's generally not as much of a fit for paralegals or marketing assistants and so on. And then generally, if there's a foundation in place there, like in the business, meaning that you can go into an event like this and you learn a lot of strategies on how to like scale that business to the next level, I think that person is going to gain more from it than a person just starting out. I would agree wholeheartedly. And we think about that a lot too, because, you know, it's like, what do you lose when you make it for everyone? Right. You know, with all things. Right. And then, you know, whereas, if we make it geared around a certain audience, let's say that in our experience has been the most engaged, you gain a lot because it becomes an event for them, but then you also risk alienating other people. So it's a tough, you know, it's something we talk about a lot, and it's definitely a tough decision.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that our listeners understand you're not going to see a session that addresses how do I incorporate my law firm, or how
correct
what choices do I need to make for technology to grow my law firm, at least so. From a solo to a small firm. So, but I think your point about addressing scaling a practice. So if you have a practice and you're comfortable with it, but you desire to scale it to the next level, then absolutely this is the event to attend.
Well, and that's what we say, you know, it's a growth conference, right?
Well, so right. It's right there in the title.
Yeah, in that also being said, so there are phenomenal conferences within the legal industry. We pulled a lot of inspiration from those in the industry, even outside of it. I mean, the Apple conferences you mentioned, like, I'd be lying if I wasn't watching every single keynote, and, you know, even looking back over the years and saying, like, they've done so many things so well. Right. But, you know, at ours, I want, you know, we always think about it at every event, like, how do we want people to feel when they first get there, and then how do we want them to leave when they go home? And the feeling when they first get there, the way I can describe it is, I always tell the team, I want them texting somebody who they know that's very close to them, that's not there with them at the event, and texting them, this is effing awesome, right? Like, yeah. You should be here, or I'm so glad that I came. Because it's hard to get people out of their office, period. And then on the way home, it's not even so much that the person is just inspired, because I think, you know, people leave a lot of events inspired and motivated, but they almost leave like rejuvenated, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Michael, let's wrap things up here, and let's talk about your podcast, which is in my rotation of podcasts that I listen to, and just what are you trying to do with the podcast, and where are you taking it?
Yeah, well, you know, I took a lot of inspiration from you on this one, candidly, in the sense that we launched the podcast, I think, during one of the first few weeks of with COVID, and we were actually originally going to launch it later in the year. And the name we actually get the same as the name of the book. So it's called The Game Changing Attorney Podcast, and the book is called Game Changing Attorney. And we did that because it carried a very similar theme. So my goal was to be able to interview like market leaders within the legal industry and even outside of it. So we had interviews with like Chris Voss, like the FBI hostage negotiator, Hal Elrod, and so on, both of which are not lawyers. But then we also feature some, you know, market leaders, like whether it's John Morgan or Alexander Shannara or Mark Lanier or Mike Papantonio. And my goal with this entire podcast as a whole was that I knew that not everyone would agree with every speaker. And I actually knew that a lot of people wouldn't like every speaker. There's some that they absolutely, you know, that disgust them, that they're like, I can't believe you had John Morgan on the podcast, or I can't believe you had, you know,
Chris Voss.
I can't tell you who, yeah, whoever, right? But my goal was that if someone would listen to that podcast, at the very least, they could understand that person and where they were coming from. They didn't have to like them or agree with them, but they could understand them. And I feel sometimes it's a mistake to only listen to, you know, information and insights from people that you agree with, because you miss out on a lot of learning. But for example, I mean, John Morgan, love him or hate him, you know, he's doing $1 billion in fees this year. He's going to invest $150 million in marketing this year. Would it not be interesting to hear about, okay, how does this person think? How do they make decisions? How do they manage their team and so on? Just to pull out something, right? So that you could apply it in your own business. So that's kind of the nature of the podcast. And Neil, I wish you would have told me this. I wish I would have known this up front, but starting a podcast is like the ultimate hack for like learning from really intelligent people. Just learning from other people. I find that I learn as much, if not more, from the guests that I have on than the other way around.
Well, quite candidly, when people ask me what motivated you to start the Law Entrepreneur, I told them, you know, free advice. I thought if I could do it for 3 or 6 months, I could pick the brains of a lot of smart people, and you know, it'd be free coaching, and you know, I would get all that I had hoped to get out of it, you know, in 3 to 6 months. Little did I know that 4.5 years later, 223 episodes later, we'd still be doing it, and I'm still learning. I'm still having a great time.
Amazing how that works, right?
Yeah, it really is. Amazing how that works. And thankfully, I have listeners who continue to follow us, and our audience grows. And I'm sure the same is going to be the case for the Game Changing Attorney podcast. So, Michael, tell everybody how they might get in contact with you if they want to find out more information about Game Changers 3 Summit and where to pay attention to regarding announcements with respect to its scheduling and the like.
Yeah. So I'll give a few links. So the book is on Amazon, you know, the podcast is on iTunes, but if you go to gamechangingattorney.com, you can access both. And then in regards to the conference, if you go to crispsummit.com, C-R-I-S-P, P as in Paul, summit.com, you'll see all the information there and all the insights there. Those are probably two best places that I would encourage anybody that, you know, the book itself, that was, I mean, even looking back, you know, and across all the interviews, across everyone that I spoke with, I mentioned this to you earlier, I read it again a few weeks ago, and it was amazing to me, like looking back, how those same principles are still true today. They're still true in, you know, pandemics, they're still true in market downturns and so on. And actually, if nothing else, there's actually more opportunities. But it's just interesting to see how that's held up. But it was really that if I had to start over again, or if I, you know, if a law firm had to start over again, that would be the way to do it.
Well, Michael, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us today. I know you're really busy, and I look forward to popping down to Hotlanta and being a part of Game Changers 3, hopefully in November, but if not November, whenever it takes place, you can count on me.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that, Neil.
All right. Thanks again, Mike, for being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists and Jurisdiction. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility, and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.